And John, let me ask you, with the title of your book, The Ownership of All Life, is it possible to own life?
Yes, indeed. And we'll definitely get into that, because people can patent human genes and also sequences, which they have done. About a quarter of the genes that were discovered in the Human Genome Project have now been patented. And there's a great legal battle going on right now to determine on what grounds you may or may not patent a gene. You have to say that you're going to use it for something, but you know, you can phrase that in general terms, or we want to improve kidney function,
right.
So
right.
This sort of thing. So it's hard to say what's going to fly in a courtroom, but these genes and patent pendings for these genes, many of them have been patented, and that's how...
How bizarre, isn't it? I mean, the mere fact that they discovered them, they claim they own them?
Yes, they own them. And in fact, there was a court case in which a guy who had leukemia was operated on in a university hospital in California, and they took some of the blood out, and they kept it, and they formed some, you know, genetic information from it, and they used it to produce proteins, and he didn't even know about it. So he sued them, and there was a huge amount of money involved, and he lost. The university won. So these things are happening all the time. In fact, you've got drug companies, I mean, if you look at plant life going all over the world, looking at plants, you know, for drugs and patenting everything they can get their hands on. There has been patented patents formed from cells, hair, skin, etc., of so-called vanishing, quote, primitive cultures in certain parts of the world, and critics of this call it the Vampire Project. So this is ongoing. And the second scientist that I met in 1994, who was referred to me by the first one, tuned me in on this and said, this is happening now, and it's accelerating, and you're going to see a lot more of it. And there will be legal battles over the conditions under which you can get patents, but they're doing it, and they're going to continue to do it. This is a guy that I met in 1994 while I was running for Congress in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
The first scientist turned me on to him. He came back. We spoke. He handed me a folder with a CV, a resume on this second scientist. He said, I want to pass you along to this man. He is a molecular biologist, geneticist. And I was running for Congress at the time in L.A. I was giving a talk and went down to a parking lot, Santa Monica Beach. And there he was. I had his photo. He knew who I was.
He wasn't hiding.
He wasn't hiding. We walked around the parking lot for about an hour. And to bring up the point that you mentioned earlier, he gave me a sheet with a quote from an interview in Newsday, newspaper, January 9, 1994. The statement, verbatim, which I pulled, is, what is called for here is not genocide, the killing off of the population of incompetent cultures, but we do need to think realistically in terms of phasing out of such peoples. Evolutionary progress means the extinction of the less competent. That's a quote from Richard Lynn at the University of Ulster, interviewed by Newsday, January 9, 1994. He said, you get the picture here? He had other quotes as well. And you can find a number of these quotes at a website called the Center for Genetics and Society. I'm saving up the best one for a little bit later. But so we began to talk, and he said, I know now that you know about Farben, I.G. Farben. You know about Mengele and his experiments at Auschwitz, and you certainly know that Farben supported Auschwitz and that a lot of research was done under their auspices there. He said, now here's the thing that you need to understand. Farben began to believe, because it was so successful as a chemical cartel in producing dyes, plastics, materials of all kinds.
Were they based just in Germany at that time?
They were, but they had agreements all over the world before the outbreak of the Second World War. They had agreements with DuPont, with Dow, with a company, a big corporation in England called ICI, Rhône Palenque in France. I mean, they were everywhere. They had many, Standard Oil, of course. They had many, many, many commercial agreements and connections. So they were essentially the fourth largest corporation in the world at the time. And the constituent corporations at that time were major ones, were Bayer, BASF, and Hecht.
Was there a Merck at the time?
I believe there was, and there may have been a connection there, but I couldn't swear to it. So he said their brilliant success was in synthesizing products from other materials. He said this is turning into now, or had turned into, a perverted form of alchemy, because scientists at Farben began to get the idea that they were going to be able to synthesize anything and everything from anything. They would be able to take an element or a compound and transform it into something else, and the prospects were unlimited.
Whether it was the willow bark to make aspirin or whatever.
Whatever. Well, I mean, their mania was without boundaries. They believed that in the future, they would, you know, you would put down, you know, lead, they would turn it into gold. You would put down, you know, water, they would find a way to combine it with something else and make some material that nobody had ever seen before. They were riding on this incredible high at the outbreak of World War II. He said, do you get that picture? This is a very intense guy. He said, do you understand what I'm saying? I said, yeah, I do. He said, well, think about that, plus now what the Nazi agenda was. They wanted to create the new human being.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to synthesize a new human being from the old human being. That was the plan. They were going to create the new master race. He said, so you're talking about here a complete joining together of this corporate cartel interest of Farben and Hitler and his inner circle. And he said, again, reiterating what this guy, the first scientist, had told me 7 years before, he said, that plan is alive today.
I don't think they would have permitted any baby to be born in Germany, John, without being genetically altered.
I believe that if they had won the war, that's exactly what they would have proceeded to do. And Farben would have been in the forefront of that. I mean, that would have been the plan.
They would have injected the mother. Who knows what they would have done? But I'm sure every born child would have been genetically altered to fit into their scheme of the master race.
Exactly. I mean, and the thing that, because I've read some of the documents now from the medical experiments, these guys, I mean, were insane beyond insane. They didn't care what they did. They didn't care what the results of the experiments were.
I mean, I would like to know, not for morbid curiosity, but the things that went awry, things that went wrong. They must have been horrible.
Oh, yeah. It was just absolutely horrendous. I mean, people developing horrible diseases that they hadn't had before, or the exacerbation of diseases they already had, like tuberculosis. They were trying out experimental vaccines. They were injecting people with all kinds of chemicals.
I mean, did they end up with four-armed babies, two-headed babies, things like that?
You know, that's possible. I think that so many of the people that they experimented on died in the camps, the prison camps,
right,
that I'm not sure how, you know, whether there were future generations or not, although I'm not putting it past Farben and the regime there, because they were willing, as I say, to do anything. And who knows what may have been exported out of there. I mean, there's all kinds of speculation, which I'm trying to avoid. I mean, boys from Brazil and all of that kind of stuff.